Okay, so this past Tuesday, we actually the spin-off shiur, the Navi shiur, right? So we finished Neviim Rishonim, which was like super exciting because even though it felt like 4 or 5 years, apparently 6.5 years later, and we just finally finished. So it was very, very exciting. So when it was done, and I knew it was gonna be done, so I kind of had to pick up a new book to read. So instead, I picked up Yael Ziegler's book on Sefer Shoftim. On Sefer Megillat Rut. So tonight, I want to share with you the first two chapters of her book, which will cover part of Sefer Shoftim and part of the Megillah. So I see that it looks like I'm glitching, but I hope everybody could hear me. So if not, somebody, I guess at some point, will text me or call me or let me know. So Josephus writes that there are only 22 books in Tanakh, which is actually not true. We know that there are how many books in Tanakh? 24. There are more than that. There are 24 books in Tanakh. So where does Josephus write that there? Where does Josephus come off with 22? So it's possible that he merges Shoftim and Rut together, and Yirmiyahu and Eicha together, because really he views them perhaps thematically as one and the same. So I think the question that we have to try to figure out is, are Shoftim and Rut really the same book? And I think we have to understand the similarities between them and the differences between them. And I think if we do that, we'll have a better sense of the message of the Megillah. So let's take a look at the starting point is the first source. Vaytalchu misham bnei Yisrael v'etahish ish l'shivto l'mishpachto v'yetzu misham ish l'nachlato. So they go, Bnei Yisrael go ba'etahi at that point in time. Each man goes back to his shevet, each person to his family, and he goes out of there, ish l'nachalato. Each person goes back to his nachala. Vayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael, ish ha'yashar b'inav yaseh. At that time, there was no king in the Jewish people, and everybody did what they saw fit. That's how Sefer Shoftim ends. Sefer Shoftim ends on the heels of the horrific tragedies of Pilegesh Begiva, the Jewish civil war that decimates and nearly wipes out Shevet Binyamin. And when it's all done, everybody goes home. And when each person goes home, where do they go? So they go to their place. And that's it. And then we're told at the end, Bayamim Ahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael. There's no king in the Jewish people. Question is, why is that the very closing part of our Sefer? What is it supposed to tell us that it makes it the very, very end of the Sefer? Alright, are we good? Because I can't tell. I'm like, everybody's frozen and I can't tell if we're still all together. Oh, you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Fine. As long as you can hear me, we're good. If you stop hearing me, can somebody just text me? And then I'll know that it's not working. Because otherwise, I feel like I'm talking to myself. Okay. So that's the question. Why is it that we end off by saying there's no, you know, that there's no king? Now, not only that, what's interesting is if you look at the pasuk, right? So you can argue that it's not such a big deal. But ish, ish, ish. Each time, there's just this random, anonymous man. Where is the... There's no names in this whole part of the story. And the truth is, if you take a look carefully at the whole last couple prakim, nobody has names at all. There's the Pilagesh, we don't know what her name is. There's the man, we don't know what his name is. So, all very, very, very strange things going on. But now let's take a look at the end of the other book. The end of Megillat Rut. So the Megillah ends, Ve'ela told to Peretz, Peretz holy to Chetzon, Chetzon holy to Ram, Ram holy to Aminadav, Aminadav holy to Nachshon, Nachshon holy to Salma, Salmon holy to Boaz, Boaz holy to Oved, Oved holy to Yishai, Yishai holy at David. So at the very same time, we get like this massive list of names going all the way back to Peretz at the very beginning and working our way all the way down to David. So if there is, on the one hand, you have Sefer Shoftim, where there are no names at all, and then you have Megillat Rut, which is just one name after another after another. The question is that significant? So I'd like to argue that that's actually a really, really, really important part. That Shoftim ends on a dreary, hopeless note. This unnamed man and unnamed men march on, and yet there seems to be like no hope for anything positive to come. And Rus is more specific. Not only is it more specific, but that specificity that we have there is what gives us hope for a brighter future. So that I think is a big piece of what's going on here. The fact that we have no names, no people. What? Say again?
Just a thought. So Shoftim ends, right? No king as well. And the next sefer is Shmuel, no?
Yeah.
So maybe that closing line is indicative of things are going to change. So was that a cliffhanger?
Okay, so that's true. So the thing, though, is when we look at the king, right, from the perspective of Sefer Shmuel, right, and we spent a long time learning Shmuel, it's not a positive when we hear about the king in Sefer Shmuel. Shmuel says it's a bad idea, he's not happy with it, the whole everything, right? But that's not really necessarily how it had to be. So I guess let's take a look at we're going to kind of take the left side of the page, and then we'll come back to the copies on the right. So if you take a look at the second source, so that's Shoftim Aleph Aleph, it says, Vahibimei Shefot HaShoftim. It was at the beginning of the days of the Shoftim. Now, if you look at the Megillah, so I have to find one quickly. Don't have a Tanakh right by my computer, but I have a Chumash, so that should hopefully help. Right, so here we go. I have Koheles, so it's got to be somewhere back there. Koheles. Sorry. Hang in there with me for a second. Here we go. So Megillat Rut, the very first pasuk, is also Vayhi b'mei Shefot HaShoftim. It's the exact same words. Vayhi b'mei Shefot HaShoftim. So listen to what the Medrash says. Atzla tapil tardema. Laziness causes sleep. Al yidei shenit atzlu yisol asu gmul chesed liyoshua. Because the Jewish people were lazy and would not do chesed for Yehoshua. The pasuk tells us at the end of Yehoshua that they buried him in his nachla to the north of Har Gaash. So Amar Rabbi Brechia. Rabbi Brechia says, "Chazarno kol mikra. I look through all the psukim. V'lo matzinu makom sheshmo Gaash. You're not going to find any place in Tanakh that's called Gaash. Umau Har Gaash. What does it mean? The mountain of Gaash." Because the Jewish people need ga'ashu, whatever that means, from doing chesed to Yoshua, ba'ota sha'a nechleko eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel is divided, Yoshua did good things. He divides the land of Israel, which is what he's supposed to do, and the Jewish people are busy with their work. That's all they were doing. They refused to do chesed to bury Yoshua properly. Yoshua did not get a good, proper send-off. And what does God want to do? God decides that he's going to shake up the world. So the Har Ga'ash is not an actual real place, but it's indicative of God's feelings towards this whole thing. God is not happy. The Jewish people got lazy. So did this Medrash really happen? I don't know. Meaning it seems strange to think that Yoshua really wasn't buried properly. The Jewish people seem to be in a good place when Yoshua dies. What exactly is happening here? So the Medrash, according to Yael Ziegler, who, if you've never heard her or never read her stuff, she is incredibly brilliant. So the Medrash is telling us that there is no chesed. The people did not do chesed. So, and specifically, what chesed does it choose? Burial. Why? What's unique about burial as far as chesed goes?
Thank you.
Right, it's chesed shel emet.
No acknowledgement, no thank you from the person.
100%. So if I'm interested, if the Jewish people, if you want to see where they're really holding, you're going to look at how they are in terms of that kind of chesed. Because if you're going to look and see how is chesed in general, so sometimes I do chesed because it's worth it for me. Meaning I help you, but my hope is that because I help you, one day I'll be able to call in that favor. I know it doesn't sound very good, right? It doesn't sound really good, but, you know, there is within the altruism of chesed, there is like in the back of my mind, right? I'm going to cook you a meal now because you need one, but what's going to happen one day? I might need one in return. So if you want to look at the real indicators of whether a person's a baal chesed, you have to look at it from the indication of how do they deal with chesed shel emet? Are they going to bury Yoshua? If they don't bury Yoshua, it means they know Yoshua has nothing left to offer them. So that's, I think, a really, really, really important piece to understand. That the breakup of the Jewish people at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim has to do with the fact that they're not balei chesed. And Yael Ziegler points out that that's going to lead, that if you're not a Baal Chesed, the next step is, if you're not being kind to other people, it's going to lead to a certain sense of disloyalty. And Yiftach takes care of himself. He's only concerned with himself. You see that in his interactions. Shimshon is betrayed by his own people. And worse is Avimelech, who kills his entire family. This is the picture that we have in Sefer Shoftim. So the question then becomes, why is it that Shoftim and Rus are connected to each other? Is it simply the first pasuk, Vayhi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim, that they have the same four words? Is it just that Boaz midrashically is one of the Shoftim? Or is it more than that? So tonight I want to focus on the story at the end of Sefer Shoftim, the story of Pilegesh Begiva. We'll quickly go over the story. I suspect that some people know more of it and some people less. So we'll just give a brief overview. There's this man who's married, has a concubine, a Pilegesh, and he's not happy with her. So she's banished to her father's home. And so she stays there. And after a while, he kind of misses her, so he goes back to get her. And his father-in-law-ish, because the concubine has like limited whatever, his father-in-law keeps him there for a day. It's too late to travel. This goes on for a few days. Finally, the guy goes, I'm leaving. And when he leaves, so they're traveling, and along the way, as they're traveling, they have to pick a place to stay. And so they decide that they're going to stay. They have a choice. They can go a little further or they can stay in the non-Jewish city. So the guy says, oh, we can't stay in the non-Jewish city. That's like dangerous, right? The people in the non-Jewish city, they're going to be bad to us. Let's go to the Jewish city. So they go to the Jewish city and this old man takes care of them, invites them in, serves them food. Everything is wonderful, except that once they settle in, the people of the city see that there are guests there. They knock on the door and they tell the man, right, let your guest come out, right? The man that came. We want to get to know him, which we know from the story of Stom is they want to sodomize him. So he's looking and saying, my prospects don't seem very good. So he pulls one out of Lot's playbook. And he says, what do you need me? Take my concubine. He throws his concubine out, closes the door, he goes to bed. It's like pretty bad, right? But it gets worse because he sleeps the night while she is violently raped all night long from the entire people of this city. And then they drop her at the doorstep. After they drop her at the doorstep, he gets up in the morning, good sleep all night long, and he sees that she's laying at the doorstep. So he like says, hello, hello, it's like time to go. And she doesn't respond. So I don't know, he kicks her, he pushes her, he shoves her, he taps on her, whatever he does. In the end, so he realizes she's dead. He takes the girl, throws him on his donkey, goes back home, cuts her up into pieces, mails her to all the shvatim around town, and says, look what Shevet Binyamin did when I spent the night here. Everybody gets like up in arms, and they decide that they're going to try to exact justice on Shevet Binyamin. The problem is that they don't really want to get Shevet Binyamin, they just want to get the town of Giva. So they turn to the people of Binyamin and say, like, hand over Giva and everything will be fine. The people don't hand over Giva. And so there is a civil war, many people die, and in the end, when it's all over, so there's about 600 men from Binyamin that are left, and like it's pretty bad. So that's where we end off. The story sounds actually very similar to the story of Sidon. So let's take a look at the last source on this page, the pasuk in Zephaniah. So Zephaniah says, Lachain chayani nu'um Hashem tzvakosel ke Yisrael, ki mo'av kistom tiyeh, mo'av will be like stone, uvnei amon ka'amora, mimishak charul, mechrem melech shmamad olam. It'll be a place with no vegetation, full of salt, and desolation forever. Sheirit ami vazum v'yeter goyin chalum. Okay, that's the end. Zephaniah says that the sin of stone was so severe that the land can never be rebuilt, it can never be repopulated. Stone will forever look the way it looks after the destruction of stone. Shoftim ends with Pilegesh Begiva, which seems to be the exact same story. So the question is, what's the connection? So in order to understand that, so I want to try to lay out a couple themes in Megillat Rut. So we all know the story of Rus, right? It's a pretty easy one. So if I were to tell you, if I were to ask you, what are some of the themes of the Megillah, what would they be?
Geirus,
okay, right, that's true. Conversion, that's an important one. What else?
Loyalty to mother or stepmother, mother-in-law.
Okay, good. Loyalty to family. What else?
Inheritance.
Okay, good. What else?
Yibum. Really bad first names for kids.
Right, it's true. Well, actually, only Machlon and Kilion, right? But yeah, okay. So that's true. So we have a lot of different ideas here. So I want to try to go with a few of them. So first off, let's talk about Chesed. So what are some of the chasadim that are done in the Megillah?
Leket.
Okay, Leket, right? So there is Boaz and his willingness to give the stuff to the poor. Good. What else? Okay, so there's, right, Ruth and Naomi. There's like a tremendous amount of chesed by Ruth towards Naomi, which is like seemingly like meshugin the chesed because like she doesn't seem to have anything that she's going to get out of it, and yet she goes for that. Okay, where else is there chesed? Right, so where? Like, let's try without looking at the psukim, right? Let's try to glean.
He tells his forehands to make sure that she's not molested, so to speak.
Right, so he takes care of her in the sense that he makes sure that nobody bothers her. Okay, that's good. What else does he do for her?
He lets her be the night that she stays over instead of spreading his feet on her, over her.
Right. So that whole night is weird, right? Maybe we'll get to that at the end for a little bit. But yeah, he definitely like is, you know, quite gracious and gentlemanly that night. Okay, what else? So what happens that first time? Besides saying to her, you know, you could drink at the water fountain that belongs to the employees, right? And you could, like, nobody will bother you. But he goes one step further. When the day is over, he goes and gives her what?
He gives her a bed and water and sends home for Naomi, too.
Right. He takes care of her and makes sure that she has stuff. So we have, like, this component of chesed. We have this component of, like, food, right? And also, if Shoftim is a book where there are no names, it seems like everywhere you turn in, say, for in the Megillah, there are names, right? Vayhi b'mei Shoftim, vayhi rav ba'aretz, vayelech ish mibeit lechem Yehuda, v'shem ha'ish Elimelech, v'shem ishto Naami, v'shem shnei banav Machlon v'chilyon Ephratim. In the first two psukim, right, there is no anonymity. You have the man, he's Elimelech. You have his wife, she's Naomi. You have his two sons, Machlon and Kilion. Then, not long after, you meet who? You meet Naomi and you meet Arpa and Rus. There's only one person in the entire story who's unnamed. Who's that?
Pliny Almoni.
Right, but even Pliny Almoni. Do you have to name him Pliny Almoni? What could we name him? Right, he could just be an Ish. So even when you have a guy without a name, he doesn't really have no name. He sort of has a name. So what we have to try to understand is, why is it that the Megillah has seemingly this hyper-focus on names, in contrast to Shoftim, which seems to often not have names? The daughter of Yiftach, Pilegish Begiva, the man that houses them, by Pesel Micha, they're missing names. There's a lot of people that don't have names in Shoftim, and yet Rus is the exact opposite. That's one. And Chesed seems to be paramount in the story of Rus, and it seems to be missing in the story of Shoftim. In fact, chesed doesn't, I think the word chesed only is in there once, and it's not even in a, what we would call a classic chesed type of way. So now let's take a look at the first page. We have like the big box in the middle with the psukim. We're not going to go through all of them. Sorry, David, you just scrolled up. We're going to do the middle one. Four from the bottom, four from the top. Vayomer elav Adonav lo nasur lish nachri. So the man is trying to decide, right, the ish in our story, where should he go? He says, lo nasur el ir nachri. We're not going to go to the ir nachri, the city of the non-Jews. Asher lo b'mnei Yisrael heina. Vavarnu ad Giva. Let's go a little further and we'll go to Giva. So let's take a look at the next part, at the pasuk right across from it. The parallel in Megillas Rus is Madu matzadichem beinach lakireni vanochi nochria. Right? Why do you pay attention to me and I'm in nochria? So, whereas the man in our story says, avoid the nochrim, avoid the non-Jews, she's specifically focused on by Boaz, despite the fact that she is a stranger. Somebody sounded like they tried asking a question. Okay, maybe not. So now let's look down two below that. Vatipol petach beta ish asher adonai sham ad ha'or. So they throw her by the doorstep of the man until morning. And Vayakam Adonai HaBoker, he gets up in the morning. So, Vatomer Emtsa Chein Beinecha Adoni. So, she says, I hope I find favor in your eyes, my master. They both call the other person master, but there is a relationship of respect between one, namely Rus, and not the other. So now take a look at the last one on the page. So vayit'alalu ba kol ha'layla raboker. They raped her all night long. Vayishalchu ha'kalot ha'shachar. And at dawn, or as the morning, you know, started, they sent her home. Vatavo ha'isha lifnot ha'boker. The woman gets there in the morning. Vatipol petach beit ha'isha asher adonai sham ad ha'or. Vayakam adonai ba'boker. So she gets up. And she falls down by the door until the morning, and the guy gets up in the morning. Now, if you take a look at the pasuk, you'll notice that we have boker three times. Now, if you look across, it says lini halayla vaya boker yaglech tov yigalim lo yachpotz lagalech ugaltich anochi chayashem shichvi ala boker. So this is the night that Ari was talking about before. It's the night that she is spending in the granary, and what happens? He says to her, right, sleep the night here, and in the morning, if he redeems you, great, and if he doesn't redeem you, I swear to God that I will do it, sleep until the morning, v'tishklav margalot avad haboker, and she sleeps by his feet until the morning. Baboker, baboker, baboker. Three times we have baboker in each one, and yet the morning is so different for each of them. In the morning of the Pilegesh, she drops dead, and he finds her, having given her no comfort or protection all night long. Whereas in Rus, he says to her, the morning will bring redemption, but I will keep you safe until morning. So again, there seem to be pretty strong differences between these psukim. A lot of similarities in language, but very, very, very different stories. Okay, let's turn to the second page.
What about now?
Yeah.
I don't want to get off topic, but what made the people of Giv'a so bad?
You mean how did that happen? Is that the question?
Yeah. I mean, they were part of Binyamin. They were the Jewish city that they specifically went to. How could it be that they were so evil?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Meaning, a lot of Sefer Shoftim is like, you kind of scratch your head. I found, at least, that like Yehoshua is like in a good place. Shoftim not. Shmuel, like there's places where you sit there, you're like, all right, we got this one. Like, we're not so bad. Malachim Aleph, I liked a little bit more in that regard. I thought there was more promise. And then you get to like Malachim Bet and it all hits the fan again, just like in Shoftim, where you just sit there, you're like, holy cow, how could this be happening again?
Shoftim is all myself. This is what I want for pleasure. This is what I need. And now Ruth, everything is about the other person. So it's the exact opposite of how we look at their situation between two people. And so they only think about what their own personal need is. And then Ruth, their only thought is the other person's need.
Correct. Greg, 100%. So I think what we need to figure out, though, and this is what we should be thinking about, is why is that? Meaning, how does that happen? Like, how do you go from Yehoshua, where the Jewish people are in a pretty good place, to the end of Yehoshua, where seemingly it's not as good, and definitely by the beginning of Shoftim, it's really bad? Like, how exactly does that happen? So that's what I want to try to figure out. But if you take a look at the second page, I think Henry, your question will begin to unwrap it a little bit more, and I think and Greg 100% is on the right track. So take a look at the third one there. Vayakam adonai ha'baboker. So he gets up in the morning, and then it says vatakam b'terem yakir ishet re'ehu, and she gets up to leave before anybody will see. So she sneaks out. That's on purpose in order to avoid being seen, because you don't want anybody to say, "Oh, you see." Right, there was stuff going on between Boaz and between Rus that night. But he, I picture it almost like, you know, like it's in the morning, right? Like Shabbos morning or a regular weekday morning, right? You grab your bag, the newspaper is at your doorstep, you get in your car, right? So he's sort of in the same way, but as he's going to get the newspaper, as he steps over the threshold, he's like, wait a second, what's she doing here? Why is she on the doorstep? And why isn't she bringing me coffee? And why isn't she answering? So that's our next one. So Hotzeit Ha'ish Asher Baal Beit Chav Negda Enu. They say, take the man out, we want to know him. And then, Vayedu Ota, they know her. Vaytalu Bakol Alay Lara Boker. And then, if you take a look at the other side, Vayomer Al Ivadaki Va'aisha Agorin. He says, nobody should know this. So they get to know her, but Boaz says, we got to keep this quiet. Ki Odea Kol Sharami Ke Eshet Chaylat. Everybody knows that you're an Eshet Chayil. Now, Vayakam Adonai Baboker, Vayftach Dol Tov Tabayit, Vayetze Lelechet Darko. We have Vayakam, he gets up, Vayetze, he goes, Lid Darko, on his way. Vatakam Hi V'chaloteha. She gets up with her daughters-in-law, it's Naomi. Vatetze Min HaMakom Asher Hayta Sham, she leaves the place. Vatelachna Baderech Lashuv El Eretz Yehuda. And they go back to Yehuda. So again, you have the same three verbs all together. And then it says, Vochez V'pilakshi. I will grab my pilegesh and cut her up. And then Boaz says, he says, hold your mitpachat, your whatever, your kerchief, and I'll fill it up. Now you couldn't possibly contrast worse. Right? He's feeding her, and the husband is cutting and chopping his wife up. Okay. I want to take a look at one last pasuk for now, and then I want to try to understand a little bit better. So we're told, "Vayishmu b'nei Benyamin ki alu b'nei Yisrael hamitzpah." B'nei Benyamin here that the Jewish people went up to mitzpah. Uboaz ala hashara, hashar. Boaz goes up to the gate. Okay, so that's what we got. So I want to jump back. It's not on the sources, but I think it's an important thing to do. I want to jump back into the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. The very, very beginning of Sefer Shoftim. I wonder if I have a Tanakh that's like relatively close. No luck. Okay, hold on 1 second. I'm actually going to pull it up on my computer. Okay. So at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, right, the Jewish people have to figure out, like, what are they supposed to do? Like, they don't know. Yoshua died. There is no leader. So here's what we're told. Vayhi acharei mot Yoshua, vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem le'mor, mi yaleh lanu l'knani v'tchila lilachem bo. Yoshua dies, and the Jewish people ask God, saying, right, they go to the Urim Metumim, and they say, "Mi yaleh lanu al Knanim v'tchila lilachem bo?" Who should go up to the Knanim to fight for us? Vayomer Hashem, Yehuda yaleh. So God says Yehuda should go up first. Those are the instructions that they're given. Okay, so Yehuda yaleh tchila. Yehuda is supposed to go up first. Now, interestingly, at the very end of our parsha, of our sefer, right, what do we have? Vayishmu b'nei Benyamin ki alu b'nei Yisrael hamitzpah. We have once again, shkayach. We have once again the fact that they're going up. And then it says, uboaz ala hashar. A lot of people are going up. So where did the Jewish people, I think it was Henry asked the question, wow, this is like really cool what we could do. Okay, so Henry asked the question, like, how could it be that the people of Giva were so bad? How does that happen? Meaning, like, we start off the Sefer in a, I don't want to say a great place, but, like, it's not a bad place. How do we get from Yoshua dying to the end, where they rape an innocent woman, and this crazy man cuts his wife up, and mails her along, you know, to all the tribes of Israel? How does that happen? So this is what I want to try to figure out. There's no question that the Jewish people, there's like a breakdown. So where's the breakdown? So the Jewish people are going to, and this is Yael Ziegler's thought. She does a much better job explaining it than I do. But she suggests the following. She says that the Jewish people started off in a good place. And God says them at the beginning, as you can see in the right side of the screen, after they die, the Jewish people have a really good question. What are they really asking when they're saying, Miyalelanu elaknani b'tchila lilachem bo? What do they really want to know?
A leader.
Right, who's going to be our leader? They want to know who's going to be our next leader. They're nervous. Yeshua's gone. Who is going to lead us and take us to the next step? There's still plenty of people that are left in the land that they have to get rid of. And who's going to do it? So Hashem says, Yehuda Yale. So Yehuda's going to go up. And what happens? Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon, Achiv. Aleiti. David, can I ask you a favor? Can you just make the Shoftim a little bit bigger, please? All right, perfect. Right, so he says, Aleiti bego rali v'nilachama b'knani v'lachti gamani itcha bego ralecha v'yelichid hoshimon. When you read Pasuk Gimel, I think the question they have to ask yourself is, how does Yehuda take the instructions from God? Right, the question that the people have in Pasuk Aleph is, Mi alelanu? Who's going to take us up? Who's going to lead us? So God says clearly, Yehuda Ya'aleh. Now, is that a surprise that God says Yehuda Ya'aleh?
Yeah, they were destined to be the kings.
Right, Yehuda's supposed to be the king. But does Yehuda's answer in Pasuk Gimel give you the sense that he's ready to embrace that? Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon Achiv. Yehuda says to Shimon his brother, Alei iti b'gorali. Come up into my goral. V'nilachama b'knani. And we will fight the knani. V'halachti gamani itcha b'goralecha. And I will fight with you in your goral. Vayelech ito Shimon. Shimon joins with him. What does that sound like?
I don't have such a problem with it because Shimon was known to be a fighter. So Yehuda's ready to take on, and he says, I have a brother who I can trust who will go to war with me, and we'll take care of the problem.
We'll take care of what problem?
My problem, Gorali.
Right.
Action, and then we go to yours.
Right, I think that
it says we're going to come up a Kanani. We're going to go to war with the Kanani. Which right. Is exactly what they asked in the first pasuk. Who's going to fight with us to the Kanani?
Right, but I think if the pasuk read Aleiti v'nilachama b'knani, halachti right, and then it left out halachti gamani itcha b'goralecha, I would agree with you. But what it seems like is what they're saying is the only area I really care about, says Yehuda, is my goral. But I'd like to strengthen my forces, so I'm going to bring you Shimon in to join us. But hold on, because I'm bringing you in to join in, it's transactional. The only way you'll join me is if I promise you that I'll pay you back and do the same when your time comes, right? So I don't think that it's coming from a place of leadership. I think it's coming from a place of, I got to do what's best for me.
I haven't read other than what I see on the screen. But it looks like in the later psukim, he's taking care of a lot more than just what's in his own territory.
So he takes care of Adoni Bezek and the area by Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim is his northernmost border. And then afterwards, he goes down to the south, which is the area of Shimon. And then after that, he goes to where? He goes to Chevron. Chevron is also Beit Lechem Yehuda. So to me, it seems like it's more he takes care of himself. So this is what Yael Ziegler says. And I think it's brilliant. She says that there are three areas that the Jewish people need to deal with. And it's really where Shoftim goes. Shoftim deals with the fact that there is no leadership. And that's going to lead to religious deterioration and social deterioration. So where do we see the religious deterioration? So before the story of Pilegesh Begiva, there's the story of Pesel Micha. Pesel Micha is this weird story with this guy who needs a... he finds a Levi, and this guy becomes his Kohen, and this Kohen worships God, but it's not really God. It's idols. And so there's the religious deterioration. And then we have our story, which leads to the story, obviously, of not religious deterioration, but social deterioration, when the whole thing happens in Givah. So take a look on the third page at the Abar Benel. Yeah, because I think the Abar Benel shares a really, really, really fascinating comment. He talks about when the whole story unfolds with Pesel Micha, he says, V'heim amru sha'al nabelukim. So they said, ask for God. V'sheila hazot hayta etzlam shayu choshvim ki oto pesel haya suoy b'sha'a v'ofen kach. They thought that there was a bit of spirituality, and actually they thought they were communicating with God. They thought that they'd get to God, but this pesel was a medium to get to God. Therefore, they were by themselves, the Kohanim, engrossed in thought. They were hoping to hear the future. They thought this was actually something that was really God. They hoped that they were in a spiritual place, and they were hoping that they were actually going to be able to communicate with God. So, Yael Ziegler offers this possibility. What's going on is that the Jewish people, as you watch the story deteriorate, it all starts with Yehuda Ya'ale B'tchila. Yehuda has to go up first. And Yehuda, God is ready for a king, but the Jewish people aren't willing to take a king. Why not? Because it's easier not to have a king. It's easier to live in a society, like Greg said, where everybody takes care of themselves. Ish kolay, isha yashar beinav ya'aseh. I do whatever works for me. I do whatever will make me happy. I do whatever is going to be, you know, bring me enjoyment. That's the society that they lived in. So it starts with lack of leadership. It leads to spiritual decay, and eventually it leads to social unrest. And really, it climaxes with the absolute deterioration of the Jewish people and the civil war. What I want to try to do, and this is my last point, but I hope that this helps pull it all together, I want to take a look at Boaz. I think Boaz often is one that we don't spend enough time trying to understand. Boaz is a gentleman. Boaz takes care of Ruth. Boaz is about chesed. He really does things that one would say are above and beyond. But I think the most incredible thing that Boaz does is Boaz does something for Naomi. Not for Naomi, for Ruth. When Ruth arrives with Naomi, what kind of reaction does she get from the people? Everybody looks at her and says, "Ugh, this is the miserable non-Jewish lady that came with Naomi." How does Boaz help? When Boaz takes her under his wing, and when Boaz feeds her, and when Boaz cares for her, he sends the message to everyone that she matters. And by the end of the story, there's a certain kindness that is that permeates the city of Beit Lechem, and it hits Rus herself. It's Boaz that makes that happen. You need leaders, because without leaders, society falls apart. But you also need leaders that are kind and care. And specifically, they need to care about the individual. The individual really, really, really matters. That's like really a big deal. When we end off Sefer Shoftim, we're told the following. V'yitalchu misham bnei Yisrael v'eitahi ish l'shivto ulemishpachto. Each man to, this is, it's the top of the first page. Each man to his shevet, each man to his family, each man by himself. People didn't care about anything that wasn't directly connected to them. What Boaz does is Boaz says there is a person that's not really connected, and yet I'm going to give her worth. Shoftim doesn't care about the individual. Shoftim says there are no names. Shoftim says go figure it out. That's what happens. Comes along the Megillah and says, no, everybody has a name. Everybody matters. And even people that are on the fringe of society, they need to be taken care of. They need to be dealt with properly, respectfully, and all that. And that's what Rus does. And so to go back to our beginning point with the fact that Josephus seemingly merges Rus and Shoftim, he can't. Because Shoftim is one style of book and comes along the Megillah and says everything that went wrong in Sefer Shoftim, we are here to correct. That is such an amazing idea. And Boaz creates a ripple effect. His kindness spreads out and out and further and further and further and impacts the culture and the society, the people that he was living in. That's why we read Megillat Rut. Rut is intended to explain to us where we went wrong in Sefer Shoftim. It's therefore not shocking that Rus is the one that gives birth to the ancestors of David HaMelech. David HaMelech, whose entire way of ruling was so different than all other kings before and after. He's a king that cares truly about his people, and that's all that matters. And perhaps that's also the reason why we read the Megillah on Shavuos, because when we get the Torah, we have to understand that the Torah is more than just an intellectual pursuit. The Torah requires leadership, and leadership ensures spiritual sustenance and spiritual safety, but it also ensures that there's personal safety. That's, I think, the message of our Megillah. So God willing, next week we'll pick up and continue in Megillas Rus.